Chapter 39. You know I never complain of that, if it is any compensation to me for long confinement to this room, that while I am shut up from all pleasant change I am also shut up from the knowledge of some things, that I may prefer to avoid knowing. Why should you, of all men, grudge me that belief? I don't grudge it to you, returned Jeremiah. Then say no more. Say no more. Let little Dorrit keep her secret from me, and do you keep it from me also. Let her come and go, unobserved and unquestioned. Let me suffer, and let me have what alleviation belongs to my condition. Is it so much that you torment me like an evil spirit? I asked you a question. That's all. I have answered it. So, say no more. Say no more. Here the sound of the wheelchair was heard upon the floor, and Aphrodite's bell rang with a hasty jerk. More afraid of her husband at the moment than of the mysterious sound in the kitchen, Aphrodite crept away as lightly and as quickly as she could, descended the kitchen stairs almost as rapidly as she had ascended them, resumed her seat before the fire, tucked up her skirt again, and finally threw her apron over her head. Then the bell rang once more, and then kept on ringing. In despite of which importunate summons, Aphrodite still sat behind her apron, recovering her breath. At last Mr. Flintwinch came shuffling down the staircase into the hall, muttering, and calling Aphrodite woman. All the way. Aphrodite still remaining behind her apron, he came stumbling down the kitchen stairs, candle in hand, sidled up to her, twitched her apron off, and roused her. Oh, Jeremiah! Cried Aphrodite, waking. What a start you gave me! What have you been doing, woman? Inquired Jeremiah. You've been rung for 50 times. Said Mistress Aphrodite, I have been a-dreaming. Reminded of her former achievement in that way, Mr. Flintwinch held the candle to her head, as if he had some idea of lighting her up for the illumination of the kitchen. Don't you know it's her tea time? He demanded with a vicious grin, and giving one of the legs of Mistress Aphrodite's chair a kick. Jeremiah? Tea time? I don't know what's come to me. But I got such a dreadful turn, Jeremiah, before I went off a-dreaming, that I think it must be that. You. Sleepyhead. Said Mr. Flintwinch, what are you talking about? Such a strange noise, Jeremiah, and such a curious movement. In the kitchen here, just here. Jeremiah held up his light, and looked at the blackened ceiling, held down his light and looked at the damp stone floor, turned round with his light and looked about at the spotted and blotched walls. Rats, cats, water, drains, said Jeremiah. Mistress Aphrodite negative each with a shake of her head. No, Jeremiah, I have felt it before. I have felt it upstairs, and once on the staircase as I was going from her room to ours in the night a rustle, and a sort of trembling touch behind me. Aphrodite, my woman, said Mr. Flintwinch grimly, after advancing his nose to that lady's lips as a test for the detection of spirituous liquors. If you don't get tea pretty quick, old woman, you'll become sensible of a rustle, and a touch that'll send you flying to the other end of the kitchen. This prediction stimulated Mrs. Flintwinch to bestir herself, and to hasten upstairs to Mrs. Clennam's chamber. But, for all that, she now began to entertain a settled conviction that there was something wrong in the gloomy house. Henceforth, she was never at peace in it after daylight departed, and never went up or downstairs in the dark without having her apron over her head, lest she should see something. What with these ghostly apprehensions and her singular dreams, Mrs. Flintwinch fell that evening into a haunted state of mind, from which it may be long before this present narrative descries any trace of her recovery. and the vagueness and indistinctness of all her new experiences and perceptions. As everything about her was mysterious to herself, she began to be mysterious to others, and became as difficult to be made out to anybody's satisfaction as she found the house, and everything in it difficult to make out to her own. She had not yet finished preparing Mrs. Clennam's tea, when the soft knock came to the door which always announced Little Dorrit. Mistress Affery looked on at Little Dorrit taking off her homely bonnet in the hall, and at Mr. Flintwinch scraping his jaws and contemplating her in silence, as expecting some wonderful consequence to ensue which would frighten her out of her five wits, or blow them all three to pieces. After tea there came another knock at the door, announcing Arthur. Mistress Affery went down to let him in, and he said on entering, "Affery, I am glad it's you. I want to ask you a question." " Affery immediately replied, "For goodness sake don't ask me nothing, Arthur. I am frightened out of one half of my life, and dreamed out of the other. Don't ask me nothing. I don't know which is which, or what is what." " and immediately started away from him, and came near him no more. Mistress Affery, having no taste for reading, and no sufficient light for needlework in the subdued room, supposing her to have the inclination, now sat every night in the dimness from which she had momentarily emerged on the evening of Arthur Clennam's return, occupied with crowds of wild speculations and suspicions respecting her mistress, and her husband, and the noises in the house. When the ferocious devotional exercises were engaged in, these speculations would distract Mistress Affery's eyes towards the door, as if she expected some dark form to appear at those propitious moments, and make the party one too many. Otherwise, Affery never said, or did anything to attract the attention of the two clever ones towards her in any marked degree, except on certain occasions. Generally at about the quiet hour towards bedtime, when she would suddenly dart out of her dim corner, and whisper with a face of terror to Mr. Flintwinch, reading the paper near Mrs. Clennam's little table, "There, Jeremiah. Now, what's that noise?" Then the noise, if there were any, would have ceased, and Mr. Flintwinch would snarl, turning upon her, as if she had cut him down that moment against his will, "Affery, old woman, you shall have a dose, old woman, such a dose. You have been dreaming again." Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.